What if, now hear me out, what if you're a big fat liar? Come on now, hold on. Let me ask it a different way. What if you're a bully? Now, hold on. It's not as bad as it seems. Let me ask it this way. What if you're not trustworthy? I think you're misunderstanding me. Here's what I'm really trying to ask you. What if in your life, you are an unreliable narrator? What if the story you're telling yourself isn't true? What if it's a pure fabrication based in fear, mistrust, insecurity? Can you really trust that still small voice of doubt, the fear, the tendrils of fear that lurk in the shadow of your mind, your shadow of a doubt? You likely, and I can predict this with a lot of certainty, you are likely meaner to yourself than you'd allow anybody else in your life to be to you. I'll bet you put up with more from you than you'd put up with anybody else in your life. Nobody else can treat you the way you treat you. My new book is just back from the editor. I'm going through her third-party perspective, and it prompted in my mind, what if it's time for you to go through an edit? What if you ought to right now have some third-party perspective on how great you are? And maybe it's time to tell a different story. If your story's been one of fear and negativity to yourself, about yourself, now's the time to get some third-party perspective, some life coaching, some editing on the story that could be a complete freak show and totally made up in your mind, because you, and I will prove it on the program today, you are a miracle.
Stuck on you. Got his feeling down deep in my soul that I just can't lose. Guess I'm on my way. I needed a friend, and the way I feel now, I guess I'll be with you till the end. Guess I'm on my way. I might be glad to stay. Oh, oh. Stuck on you. I've been a fool too long. I guess it's time for me to come on home. Guess I'm on my way. So hard to see that a woman like you could wait around for a man like me. Guess I'm on my way. I might be glad to stay.
Ooh, ooh. It's showtime.
Live from Homer, Alaska, I'm Chris Story, and this is On Top of the World, Radio on Purpose. Yes. Yes.
God bless you.
Nailed it. That's the way you start a radio program. Welcome to the top of the world. We are sponsored in part by Horizon Wireless at 907-226-3130. I told you the story about that gal that called me up. She said she'd been waiting for, you're going to want to write this down, 2.5 months for somebody else to bring her wireless here on the Southern Peninsula. What? I said, no, wait no more. Call 907-299-3130. Horizon Wireless was at her door the next day. Hello. Michael Jones is going to be my guest next week here on Top of the World. Michael L. Jones, for the record, running for Homer Electric Board of Directors. Now, see, you're going to be able to start voting, it's my understanding, for your board of directors in your own backyard of your Homer Electric Cooperative as of the 31st of March. So let's get to know Michael Jones. Who is he and why is he running for the HEA board? That's next week here on Top of the World. Just a moment or two from now, Stephen Gist will be my guest with your Alaska USA mortgage moment. What are rates doing? It's been a roller coaster, hasn't it? Well, we're going to talk to Stephen about that. Plus, buying down the interest rate, that's becoming very, very common. I mean, it's always been a thing. You can always pay some points, get a better rate, but almost ain't nobody buying a mortgage these days without paying some points, and rates are just going to continue to sort of roller coaster for the rest of the year. I mean, I think that's predictable. Optimism for the young mind. See, optimism isn't just for daydreamers. KidsHealth.org had a little piece on optimism. They call it realistic optimism. Mind you, this is aimed towards teenagers. It says optimism isn't about seeing everything as rosy, rose-colored glasses. Optimists don't ignore problems or pretend life is perfect. See, that's what I think. I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding. And I think it's been perpetrated upon the people by pessimists that optimists are stupid and just childlike. When in fact, as this little piece goes on to talk about, optimists are actually very, very prepared. They just choose to focus on what's good about a situation and what they can do to make things better. Optimists have true confidence because they are prepared. They know they need to study if they want to ace a tough test. That's applicable for any walk of life, isn't it? They know, says the article from kidshealth.org, they know they can't make the basketball team without practicing. Optimism goes hand in hand with action. It's about finding a healthy balance of positive and realistic thinking. Solutions are rarely found. You know this. Solutions are rarely found by pessimistic negativity and negative thoughts. Rarely do you find a solution. But, this isn't going to work. Oh, it worked. Well, it probably won't work for long. That's not the way solutions are found, and you know it. Winston Churchill said, pessimists see the difficulty in every opportunity, and an optimist sees the opportunity in every difficulty. As you look around the world right now, guess what? You are surrounded, I tell you, by opportunity. Yeah, it's a 24-hour news cycle that is just beating you down to the ground, as Sylvester Stallone said, will keep you there if you let it. But you can look up, bloodied your eye may be, and find opportunity. Your Mindbender is presented by AJ's Old Town Steakhouse in Old Town Homer. Call for a reservation at 235-9949. 235-9949, or go online at ajsteakhouse.com, ajsteakhouse.com. I get excited thinking about their steaks. I truly do. Now, mind you, and some will remember my vegan days, but they're behind me in this best steaks in Alaska. Truly, maybe the best steaks in North America are found at AJ's Old Town Steakhouse. From the art on the walls to the art on the plate, AJ's will impress you, I guarantee. Service, by the way, top shelf as well. That matters in a meal. AJ's Old Town Steakhouse. Now, you're applying for a gift certificate right now. Text me your name and phone number. No, just your name and answer. I don't need your number right now. I'll have it. Text your name and answer at 907-299-7653. Here's your question. And we do this every year. This is a bit of a survey that every single year we ask this question, usually in the spring. Here it is, spring. Here's the question. You just won the lottery. I've increased it from $1 million to $10 million. You just won the $10 million lottery. All right. Question number one, do you quit your job? If you haven't already retired, do you quit your job? And number two, what's the first thing you're going to do with your newfound wealth? You just won the $10 million lottery. Do you quit your job if you've got one? And what's the first thing you will do with your newfound wealth? You're playing for a gift certificate to AJ's Old Town Steakhouse. Text your name and answer, 299-7653. Chris Story here along with Mr. David Webb. We've got your mortgage moment coming up here on Top of the World. You're listening to On Top of the World Radio on purpose, and my purpose and my point is to help you live your best life. Thank you for tuning in. It's time for our mortgage moment brought to you today by Alaska USA Mortgage Company. Stephen Gist is our guest. You could do what I did. I called him the other day at 907-226-8815. And Stephen, you answer the phone yourself.
Live and in person, that's right.
Yeah, it was nice. I was able to ask you my questions. And one of the things I love about calling Stephen Gist is that you never get a guess. He'll either say, oh, here's your answer, or I don't know, I'll be back. And he always is back. Stephen, the rates have been like a roller coaster. I got a neck injury the other day just watching the rates go up and down. Where are we at today?
Oh, man, yeah. It's nice to have a good chiropractor days like this. But, yeah, we've got for our 30-year fixed, interest rate of 6.5 with an APR of 6.613. And for our 15-year, we've got a rate of 5.75 with an APR of 5.812.
It's not bad. That's better than I expected you were going to say.
Yeah. They dropped it, right toward the end of the year. And in January, they dropped pretty low. You could touch a 30-year mortgage with some points in the high fives. And we've kind of gotten close to that with these bank failures and some different things. But I think it's a concern over the bank failures that have kept things from going up too terribly high at this point.
About a year ago, maybe just a little over a year ago, I would have said maybe a third of the folks I know that are going through the mortgage process are going to either buy the rate down themselves or ask to negotiate it into the deal, whomever's going to pay for it. But it almost seems like, Stephen, today, almost every single loan or mortgage is involving buying down the rate, and that's called points. Those points are getting negotiated, whoever's paying for it. But what would you say the percentage of the deals you're doing involve somebody buying down that rate?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I would say about 70%. I would say, the calculus for some folks, some folks who either they know they're not going to have the loan for very long, or they feel like, they're going to be able to refinance, or that there's going to be the opportunity to refinance fairly soon. Some of those folks aren't paying any points because they just wouldn't break even.
Right.
And it wouldn't be any benefit to them before they did it. But the majority of the people are paying points.
And for my friends that live in Nikiski, that's 7 out of 10. That's 70%. 7 people out of 10, that equals 70%. So I just think I needed to point that out. Now, the cost of points can be negotiated, right? I mean, I mentioned that a moment ago, but I want you to verify that in fact, if it gets negotiated between the buyer and the seller, if it is a purchase, not a refi, the seller can be asked if they're willing, and it's negotiated into the deal, that point can be paid, or the buy down can actually be paid by either party, correct?
That is correct. Yep. In fact, we did have a seller kind of balk at that not too long ago. And we just gave them the information that it's something they can pay. Mm-hmm. Like you said, they, don't have to pay it if they
right.
don't want to, but it's right. something that's part of the lender allowable closing costs that can be covered by the seller.
One thing I like to remind sellers, and this has been going on for 20 years, this is nothing new. 21 years ago, I was having this conversation that what matters most is your bottom line. I mean, that's really what you want to do, is just distill everything down, look at your bottom line. So when you see the top line offer come in, let's just call it $500,000, but there's going to be some obviously traditional or customary closing costs that the seller would normally pay, and then there's going to be maybe some buyer costs typically paid by the buyer, asked to be incorporated, or the rate buy down. Really, how you want to respond, in my opinion, this is just my best practice and best advice for you, is to just reply back in concert or in sort of parity, if you will, with the style. If it's not enough money on that bottom line, don't start saying, no, I'm not going to pay for this or this or this for you. They need it, or they wouldn't be asking. Bottom line is they probably need that extra cash infused, and they're really just mortgaging it in, and you need to respond or counter if you have to, based on what it is you want, and that'll just pad your bottom line. So allow that. Like I had Stephen one time early on, this is, like I say, 20 years ago, a seller's agent came back to me and said, no, my client paid their closing costs as a buyer. They're insisting your buyer pay their closing costs. I said, but understand, they were $6,000 or something. He said, we've offered you $6,000 more than you were asking. What do they care? But it was philosophically, they couldn't get past it. But that's all part of that points conversation, is just look at your bottom line. Fundamentally, that's how you want to respond, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I see that as well, where it's, When you look at that bottom line and you see that that's the same regardless, if you build it in or whatever, but if you're getting that bottom line, then it's all the same. But I have had some, I've had agents actually ask that I call the seller to explain it to them, because they just kind of weren't kind of grasping it, and I'll walk them through it, but I've just had some sellers who just be like, nope.
Right.
We're not doing it that way.
So, yeah. And that's their right. I'm not going to push that on anybody, but I just want clarity and understanding. I appreciate you explaining that. Stephen, our question today, and people other than yourself and myself are playing for a gift card for AJ's Old Town Steakhouse. But the question, I'm curious how you'd answer it. If you just won the $10 million lottery, our question for everybody else is, would you quit your job, number one? And number two, what would you do with the money? I'm not going to ask you on air to answer number one, but I am curious, what's the first thing you would do if you found out today you just won the $10 million lottery? What's Stephen Gist doing with that money first?
Oh, gosh, what? Let's see here.
And you don't have to answer like you think I'm going to want to hear. Just literally, are you buying a jet ski? Are you buying a jet pack and a private plane? What are you doing?
Well, I'd probably buy whatever book that is you wrote.
What's that Backyard Millionaire, you twit. Okay. You would need it, too.
I wouldn't need it at that point, but, I want to help you out. So I'd buy that. Let's see here. I think the first thing I always feel like is, just take care of my family, whoever, just have the money, take care of them. And then, look at buying some real estate. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. You mean that. You're not just saying that because we're talking about mortgages and I love real estate. I like that.
Yeah. No. I think it's good. It's funny because my family, real estate's always been part of what my family's done, whether it's on my mom's side, dad's side, going back several generations.
Yeah.
And, And so it's definitely something that we have as part of what we do and something we continue doing, absolutely.
It's really interesting because my next book, now the next one I'll be publishing in July is actually a sequel to my thriller. It's called The Watchmen. I'll talk about that more later. But the next millionaire book is going to be called The Schoolyard Millionaire, and it's aimed towards young adults and children. My 9-year-old grandson said to me, after he listened to the audio version of The Backyard Millionaire, he said, could I become a millionaire? It's like, oh, absolutely. Okay, now I've got to write something aimed towards that next generation. But I love hearing you say that you are of a multi-generation investor family, that's just in your blood, which explains why you yourself have properties and yourself is your landlord. And I mean, that just that makes perfect sense. If somebody's interested in becoming a backyard millionaire, by the way, you brought it up, not me, not plugging my book, you brought it up. But they don't know how much cash they have to have on hand. Maybe they don't have much cash on hand, or they don't know what their credit is, or, wow, what am I qualified for? I don't know. I believe that you will gladly and willingly walk people through that process and help them understand it, even if they're just exploring it right now. That is part of what you do, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I have quite a few conversations where folks are just calling me and they're just saying, "Hey, Steve, we just want to get an idea. You know, we don't necessarily want to pull credit or anything like this, but just we want to get an idea. If we want to start pursuing this, what does it look like?" And I can do kind of a, I call it kind of a sandbox prequal, where I kind of take all the numbers and do an estimate. And the main thing it does is kind of gives them an idea of, you know, what they might qualify for, but also just like, hey, here's the reality of down payments. You know, here's what we're going to need for income. Here's what the costs are going to be. And yeah, it's just a great introduction into basically, you know, what's possible out there.
And I think one of the myths or misnomers out there is that if I let you check my credit, I'm going to take a big hit. There is some impact from a mortgage lender checking your credit, but it's not worth worrying about, right? I mean, it's just better off knowing where you are and where you stand.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting with some folks that, you know, that kind of monitor their credit, or, you know, if you've got a Alaska Airlines card or something like that that tells you what your it gives you an idea of what your FICO score is, you know. If indications are that it's good in those situations, I typically don't pull credit. But if but we do talk about good credit principles. If it's good, hey, here's what you can do to maintain it or make it even a little bit better. But if someone tells me, yeah, you know, credit card tells me I'm at, you know, 630 or something like that, then at that point, I may go ahead and suggest, yeah, let's go ahead and pull credit, because there's probably something going on that you can't see it, but once we pull the report, I can see it, and then we can help put a strategy together to get that credit score up for you.
You can have this conversation by starting off at StephenGist.com. That's Stephen with a V, StephenGist, GIST.com, or call 907-226-8815. Stephen Gist, thank you.
You bet. Thank you, Chris.
Well, our question's still available for you to answer. What would you do with a $10 million you just won at the lottery? Would you quit your job, like Greg just answered he would? And what's the first thing you'd do with that money? So you get $10 million, you just won the lottery. We've upped it 10 times. It used to be $1 million. Now we're saying $10 million. Inflation, everything's going up, right? What would you do with the money? 907-299-7653. I'm Chris Story, along with Mr. David Webb. Much more to come here on Top of the World. You know, there's freedom and flexibility. There really is. Now, you admire the mighty oak, right? By the way, you're listening to On Top of the World Radio on Purpose. Christopher Story here, along with Mr. David Webb, bringing you what my mom calls the greatest show on earth, On Top of the World Radio. Find this show at ilovehomeralaska.com. You can also download our podcast of the show, the radio show and podcast, The Backyard Millionaire. And you can buy my books there as well. And start your property search all over Alaska at ilovehomeralaska.com. The mighty oak is tall and rigid. It's strong. But at some point, the rigidity of the old trunk might give way, or will give way, to the winds of time. Freedom, joy, are found in flexibility, and yet remaining rooted in truth, honor, principles, and yet flexible and tolerant. You hear so many that preach tolerance and yet are themselves rigid and intolerant. There's almost always more than one way to solve a problem. But if you predetermine that you and you alone hold the singular answer, or your way's the only way, you'll break apart in the rough seas of life that are surely coming. Stephen Covey, in fact, had it right in his book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, when he said, "Seek first to understand and then to be understood." A friend of mine and I were talking yesterday, and we were talking about government class, and we didn't have the same government teacher, but I don't even remember how the topic came up. But she mentioned to me that her government teacher, his name was Jim Holcomb, was very adamant about personal responsibility, accountability, and he highly recommended, ironically, well, after our TBC Radio word, you'll find out if I use that incorrectly or not. Ironically, the book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, to some students that he felt could use it, could benefit from it. I thought that was inspiring. I really liked it. It made me think about Stephen Covey. I think about him often. It was one of the first nonfiction books in the realm of self-help or business or mindset that I read. My dad gave that to me when I was early on in business. I believe it was 1992 or 3, he handed me a copy of that. And I loved it. In fact, I loaned it to my daughter, Ashley, with Shortcuts by Ashley, by the way. And they haven't got it back yet. So if you see her, say, hey, I hear your dad would like that copy of, I've got several copies, but the one my dad gave me is the one I loaned her. I wanted to say today that you're a miracle, and I intend to prove it. First, I want to give you another chance to weigh in on our lottery question. It's presented today by AJ's Old Town Steakhouse. Would you, in fact, quit your job if you won a $10 million lottery today? Would you quit your job? And what's the first thing you'd do with your newfound wealth? $10 million just landed your account. What would you do with it first? And would you quit or would you quit your job? 907-299-7653. Weigh in on that. So Mandino might be a cool pseudonym in one of my books. We'll see. Og Mandino, he wrote in 1968 a great little book. I don't know. I mean, it's like probably 25 or 30,000 words. Very small little pocket book, 1968. And it's called The Greatest Salesman in the World. And in it, he proclaims that you, in fact, are a miracle. He writes, I am nature's greatest miracle. That's you. None can duplicate my brushstrokes. None can make my chisel marks. None can duplicate my handwriting. None can produce my child. And in truth, none has the ability to sell exactly as I. Henceforth, I will capitalize on this difference, for it is an asset to be promoted to the fullest. This is one of the most deceiving things about this little book is he calls it the greatest salesman in the world who happens, well, I'm not going to tell you who it is. I'll let you read the book. You should read the book. It's good. But the greatest salesman in the world makes us say, you are the greatest salesman in the world. All right. I couldn't even keep it for like, what, 30 seconds? It's you. You're the greatest salesman in the world. He says, I am rare. This is for you, by the way. He's writing this in the first person, but essentially it's you reading it to yourself. I am rare. And there is value in rarity. Therefore, I am valuable. Never more will I be satisfied with yesterday's accomplishments, nor will I indulge any more in self-praise for deeds which in reality are too small to even acknowledge. See, he was ahead of his time. He didn't even know about 12th place ribbons, 9th place trophies. He didn't even know about it. Og Mandino continues, I am nature's greatest miracle. I am not on this earth by chance. I'm here for a purpose, and that purpose is to grow into a mountain, not to shrink into a grain of sand. Henceforth, I will apply all my efforts to become the highest mountain of all, and I will strain my potential until it cries for mercy, for I am a miracle. Just checking the text messages here. There's going to be a tremendous shortage of labor, the labor market. If you win the $10 million lottery, there's a number of you that are going to quit. Not everybody. It's looking good. Not everybody's going to quit. I don't think the workforce is going to grind to a halt tomorrow. So what about you at 907-299-7653? If you win a $10 million lottery tomorrow, do you quit your job if you're still working? Willie is blessed for him, retired. He says he's not going to quit. But Willie said he would buy 4 rental properties. So what's the first thing you'd do with your newfound wealth if you won the $10 million lottery? And secondarily to that, would you quit your job? I mentioned earlier that The Watchmen, my next book in my thriller series, my Jacob Mann thriller series, and I can tell you what's funny about this, to me, the reason I'm chuckling, is we were taking my daughter Zoe and my nephew John's story. We were taking them up the road. They were catching a flight to Nepal. So we were driving them to Anchorage. They were going to go to Nepal to hike to base camp of, I want to say Mount Augustine, Everest. So they're going to hike to Everest base camp. And so they were taking off. And I formulated, this is probably 5 years ago, and I formulated the idea for this Jacob Mann thriller series. And it's a realtor. Finally, you've been craving your entire literate life for a hero realtor. Because realtors are played by boobs and thieves and ne'er-do-wells and movies. And, you know, they're just always sort of the butt of the joke and the idiot. And we're not. I mean, realtors are real life heroes. We just don't put a cape on in the morning. Well, some of us do. Anyway, so I remember telling, and I hadn't told anybody, but Tiffany, and we'd been watching The Office. Did you watch that series? No, not the English version, but the American version of The Office with Stephen Carell and that's the only name I can remember, but Dwight, you know what I'm talking about, Office. And Toby, the HR guy, who everybody hates. Nobody likes Toby. Toby's this annoying, cloying HR person. Nah, HR, we love our HR people, but he was annoying. In the butt of all the jokes, and he himself had some sort of a thriller series he was writing or a detective series or something, Toby Flenderson or something like that. And I remember Tiffany was telling the kids that, oh, you know, Zoe, you know, your dad's getting ready to write a thriller with Jacob Mann. And they just, those two busted a gut laughing. Who's laughing now, Ma? The Making of Man is available right now. You can go to Amazon and get an ebook, paperback, Audible. If you've not read The Making of Man, I suggest it. You don't need to have read it for when The Watchman comes out. Pub date is July 1st, Tiffany's birthday, July 1st. So it'll be coming out all over Amazon on July 1st, The Watchman, the second in the Jacob Mann series. But if you haven't read The Making of Man, I think you should. But here's the book trailer.
Making of Man by Christopher L. Story. Narrated by Michael Dukes. Opening statement. There are things I can tell you about my work, and things I shouldn't, but I will. My name is Jacob Mann. I'm a real estate agent. I don't say that to impress you. Why would I? It's simply the answer to the great American question, what do you do? He opened his beer slowly, never taking his eyes off mine. He smiled wide, exposing dark, stained teeth by a lifetime of cigarettes and chewing tobacco. It was at that precise moment that I realized how much trouble I was actually in. I was the one making the mistake. He knew I hadn't killed his mom. The smile told me everything I needed to know. I was the one looking into the eyes of a monster. He was the killer. Before me stood the beast that had torn that poor old woman to shreds with something. Probably a knife from her own kitchen. My captor wasn't a son seeking vengeance. He was an executioner who'd stumbled upon another victim.
Oh, just gave myself the chills. Well, actually, Michael Dukes gave me the chills. That's The Making of Man, available at ilovehomeralaska.com. There's a link there, or just go to Amazon, buy it. Michael Dukes can read it to you. You can read it to yourself. Paperback or ebook, The Making of Man. There's a lot of words that I misuse. And by the way, speaking of words, I'm getting several text messages a day now with the closure of Cheers. So obviously, my conversation with Tiffany last week, which by the way is available at ilovehomeralaska.com on the Backyard Millionaire podcast, and I confessed and sort of aired my laundry that it bugs me when Americans use the sign-off of Cheers. But now I'm getting it quite a bit. So well played, those of you that are sending that to me. Well played. I appreciate that. But there's a lot of words that I misuse. And when I get a book back or manuscript back from my editor, oh boy, whew, thank God for her. I'm telling you, there are words that I, what was the one that just got me? I can't think of it off the top of my head, but it was so stupid. I'm like, what? How did I not know Oh, I wish I could remember because it was so stupid. Anyway, our TBC radio word today isn't, in fact, a word. It's called sorry, that's the wrong word. Several words that you, in fact, along with me, might be misusing. Plus, think and grow rich. Can you truly think and grow rich? Napoleon Hill said in 1920 or so, he wrote The Laws of Success, which then led to his groundbreaking, incredible book called Think and Grow Rich. Anyway, he said you can. He said you can think and grow rich. We're going to talk about persistence and your state of mind. And are you doing anything creative lately? That could be the secret to not just a longer life, but a more meaningful life. We'll talk about that and more here on Top of the World. You are listening to On Top of the World, Radio on Purpose. Chris Story here along with Mr. David Webb. Do you like Jordan Peterson? Have you read his book, The 12 Rules for Life? And he's got a couple of other books, but that's the only one I've got and read. He said, did Jordan Peterson, adopt responsibility for your own well-being. Try to put your family together. Try to serve your community. Try to seek for eternal truth. That's the sort of thing that can ground you in your life. Enough so that you can withstand the difficulties of life. TBC Radio brings the word. Normally, you can find TBC Radio at tbcradio.com or call Josiah 803-9424-907, 803-9424. Get the word out about your business right here on the radio with tbcradio.com. Today's word is actually, no, not at all. It's sorry, wrong word. That's right. You might be, if you're like me at all, and I think you are because we hang out here together a lot, and the only reason you would hang out here is if you're like me, you use the wrong word sometimes. You hear a word or you read a word or you misinterpret the context or just in general, maybe our entire country's doing so. Example, our first word you might be using wrong is moot. So says this article, if you've ever said something is a moot point, you're probably suggesting that something is insignificant or irrelevant. The original definition, though, of moot, according to the Oxford English Dictionary, was a meeting or an assembly of people. So we're using it wrong. In fact, a moot court, what did moot court mean? What is that at? Judicial or moot? Oh, a moot court meant that it was a mock court, similar to mock. Anyway, so think about that. Moot might actually be using it wrong. So next time you hear of somebody assembling, say, oh, okay, well, I'll see if I can attend the moot. If you okay. Peruse. You ever say peruse? I perused the bookshelves. I didn't see anything I wanted to read. No, that's wrong. No, peruse actually, according again to the Oxford English Dictionary, meant to read something thoroughly and carefully, examine carefully or at length. See, that's peruse. Peruse, we use it as just kind of scan something. No, that is absolutely wrong. If you would like to peruse something, you will look at it in depth. Now you know. And finally, the word that you and me and rock stars might in fact be using wrong, ironic. Musician Alanis Morissette was famously grammar-shamed for her iconic 1990s hit, Ironic, wherein all of the so-called examples of irony in her song lyric were actually just unfortunate happenings. Irony refers to being opposite of what you'd expect. Isn't it ironic? Don't you think it's like rain? Somebody just told me the other day they were going to unfriend me in real life, not just social media, but in real life unfriend me if I said I liked Alanis Morissette. I do. Sorry, can't help it. course, this isn't her. This is a cover of her song, but you get the idea. It's a good tune. Down, he thought, well, isn't this nice? And isn't it ironic? Actually, no, it's not. And now you know, thanks to TBC Radio, and sorry, the wrong word. All right, let's talk about Thinking and Growing Rich. Napoleon Hill, again, wrote this book in 1936, and here's what is ironic, I think. Oh, am I using it correctly? He was broke. Yes, I am. That is ironic. He was broke. Flat broke. In fact, he was so broke, Napoleon Hill was living with his adult son. And in fact, he was not just living with his adult son. He was ruining his adult son's life because he just wasn't very nice to him and his wife. See, Napoleon had divorced his wife, and he wanted to write the manuscript for Think and Grow Rich. He'd had a lot of ups and downs of success, a lot in his life. Really, I mean, well famous, nationally known in the 30s. 20s, 30s, presidents called upon Napoleon Hill. And then, well, he fell victim to his own largesse and his own, probably use that wrong, by the way, and his own appetite for consumption, and ran off with a gal who had been helping him with his book, left his wife, mother of his children, married this gal, moved in broke and destitute with his son, his oldest son, and mistreated his son, wasn't nice to the wife, his daughter-in-law. And he so wanted to not put any money back into the coffers of his ex-wife that he put all the publishing rights to Think and Grow Rich in his new wife's name, who later, when they would divorce, took everything she took because it was in her name, not his, because he was trying to obfuscate any obligation to his prior wife. Now, hearing all of that, you may think, why do I want to listen to this guy? We made some mistakes. He was a human being. Corrected those mistakes before his life was over. And he wrote a great book. And he interviewed incredible people all around the world and across the country and around the world, those that had made it. And he had a deep desire and curiosity for what did create success. What was it that took that extra bit and pushed people over the top? And here's what he came up with. Persistence, which in fact you know is a state of mind. He said persistence is defined as follows. A definiteness of purpose, knowing exactly what you want, followed by desire. Persistence is easy to acquire, he said, and maintain with an intense and burning desire and self-reliance, to Jordan Peterson's point, belief in your own ability to carry out a plan, trusting yourself to deliver time and again. Definiteness of the same said plan. Organized plans encourage persistence. Organized plans that you follow encourage persistence and accurate knowledge, actual education and observation, a knowing instead of guessing, cooperation. Again, this is all building on persistence in your life, which is what it actually takes at the end of it all. This is what creates success. Cooperation, obtaining support, harmonious cooperation with others, willpower, the habit of concentration on your plan. And then speaking of habits, habits create success. You can cure yourself, says Napoleon Hill, of fear by daily forced repetition of habits. That's fantastic. And then he says also acts of courage, which I like. And I think we'll just close Napoleon Hill's chapter on that. To succeed in life, it truly does take acts of courage.
You have to believe in yourself. You have to believe in your ability. You are capable of anything. You can achieve any dream. Please don't limit yourself. Don't live your life limited. It's not all sadness and misery. Life's a challenge, but you will succeed. Take control of how you to come.
All right, Karen and Willie are both going AJ's on me. That's right, Karen and Willie winners of our Mind Bender presented by AJ's Old Town Steakhouse. Quick tally, just looking at the results of our annual survey, if you'd won the $10 million lottery, would you quit your job? And then what would you do with the money? To include Karen's idea, I loved her idea. She's going to buy more real estate, which I love. But also, she wants to start a foundation to help animal shelters. Fantastic. Willie's going to buy more real estate and many, many others. In fact, I would say it looks like 80% of you would buy real estate with your winnings. And I love that. I think that's fantastic. And I have to tell you, anybody that does win the lottery and keep those winnings and is able to keep those winnings in a portfolio of wealth, a majority of those people have put their money into real estate. And if you meet somebody that has sold their company, they've exited their company for millions or hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars, one of the first things they do is invest in a portfolio of real estate. To somebody else's point, Greg in Kodiak said he'd buy an apartment building. And it's funny that Greg should say that because I, in fact, was just telling a friend the other day that he's going to be coming into just over $1 million and looking to exchange. And I made the equation that you could buy this higher risk venture kind of, you know, adventure property over here and maybe hit it big. Or you could buy this property over here, like an apartment building, and just have this recurring income. And here's how I said it. I said, one, the apartment building is like a slot machine that just keeps spitting out money, and the other is headed over to the roulette table. You might win big, but you might lose it all. So real estate, and especially residential rental real estate, wow. You I don't want to say you can't lose, but it's the safest and most secure thing you could do with that $10 million. What in the world? What in the world are you doing with the news cycle? Almost none of it's good, 24 hours a day. Almost all of it's negative, mostly awful. And the truth of it is, almost nothing you can do about it. You can say a prayer. You can yell at your TV. But here's my suggestion. Try setting aside the telescope that's looking far and wide and pick up a microscope. Focus in on where you are with what you've got. You will find in your backyard people in pain. You will find people in need right where you are in your own backyard, in your community. You'll find opportunities. You'll find your fortune waiting for you in your own backyard. What in the world's going on right here where you are? This is what you and I should be focused on because you can make a difference. Your neighbors in your town can make all the difference. Six magic words can make the difference in your community. Find a need and fill it. What in the world are you waiting for? I'm Chris Story along with Mr. David Webb, and I want to close with this to remind you, and I do mean you, were born on purpose and with a purpose. Look forward in your life. Have goals, have plans, look forward to them, dream about them. And yes, learn from the past, the mistakes you've made, never repeat them. But also remember that the good life, your life, is right here, right now in the present. We'll see you next time.